is because somebody at the Council of Elrond suggests just throw it in the ocean. And they're like, okay, but that's just going to delay this. Eventually, it'll wash back up.
It's not our problem.
Well, they're elves. Some of these people are elves. Okay. So yes, it would be their problem.
It will be their problem.
This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 86 of The Horror of Babylon, where we discuss Chapelwaite. I am Ryan, and with me, as always, is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. I'm going to spend the entire episode whisper talking.
I don't think you can.
Not at all.
But I don't want to listen to that. Okay. Thank you to our patrons, Abigail the Firstbreaker, Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan.
The Full Metal Patron. And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or just across from Minister Burroughs Church in Preacher's Corners, Maine. And thank you can go in there and visit Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, who regularly goes and plays Settlers of Catan with the old grumpy guy from the show who hates everybody, whose name I can't remember. The Preacher's father-in-law. That guy.
I was gonna say, which one?
Trigger warning, death of children, deformed children, suicide, self-harm, like, there's lots of stuff. Gross worms.
Worms, yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
There's gross. A lot of worms.
Yeah. You may not find this show scary, but I guarantee most people will find it gross.
Yeah.
At least parts of it.
They had me at the tub of worms in episode one. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, that was pretty gross. So neither of us have seen this before, but just kind of on hearing about it and what it was, what were some of your expectations going in, if you had any?
I don't know. I didn't have much in the way of expectations because I just expect adaptations these days to be almost their own thing.
Which this is.
I was hoping for an adaptation of the story, but that's not what I was expecting to see.
I wasn't really hoping to have a true adaptation because, I mean, how would you do that? How would you take, like, a story that takes an hour to read and adapt it to 10 hours worth of TV?
I wouldn't have done that. I would have just made a movie. Yeah.
But I think what I was expecting was a little bit of a smaller story than what we got. It to be a little bit more intimate, to be like Adrian Brody and like one or two other characters.
Like a personal struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of hoping for and expecting, was like this sort of like a personal descent into madness.
Yeah. And that's there. But there's so much more to it than that.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, we'll get into that.
The vampire's a pure myth, superstition. I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
Background, this is based on the short story Jerusalem's Lot by Stephen King from his first short story collection, Night Shift. It premiered on Epics on August 22nd, 2021, and has been renewed for a second season, which we will get to. Yeah. That is by far the most perplexing part of all of this to me. Since it is a television series, it has had several different writers and directors instead of listing them all and what they've worked on. So here are a slew of shows that the five directors who worked on the series have worked on. Weeds, The L Word, the sci-fi Chucky series, The Flash, Battlestar Galactica, Van Helsing, The Exorcist, Turn, Terminator, the Sarah Connor's Chronicles, Lost in Space, Law and Order, Titans, Ash vs. the Evil Dead. So you've got like a big range of experience there, and definitely a lot of horror stuff and a lot of drama and some sci-fi and a little bit of everything. And there are four different writers who worked on this TV series, and they have worked on other Stephen King properties, such as the miniseries Nightmares and Dreamscapes, the 2004 Salem's Lot miniseries MacGyver, the original MacGyver, The Haunting of Hill House, the Netflix one, Bates Motel, Iron Fist, The Witcher, and The Witcher Blood Origin. So, again,
the worst rated show on Netflix.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite the achievement.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like a way to get people to watch it, because you're like, it can't be that bad.
It is.
I have never played or read or watched anything Witcher, so I probably will someday.
I'd recommend the books.
Yeah, it would be the books or a video game, more likely than the...
Henry Cavill left the TV show because he kept asking them to stay true to the source material, and they said no.
Yeah.
And when he left, they said he was too much of a gamer bro, and I'm sitting there like, yeah, that's why we like him. He cares about the source material. Yeah.
And I don't even like Henry Cavill very much anyway, so... Chapelway was set to begin production in April of 2020 in Halifax, Nova Scotia, but it was postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and filming did not pick up until July of 2020, so it was actually only delayed about 3 months, which isn't too bad, considering like how many projects were like canceled outright and died because of COVID.
Yeah.
And then, you know, came out and about a year later in August of 2021, so not too bad.
And that's that. Another story in the classic infallible three-act structure. Good enough for Aristotle, good enough for The Simpsons.
Mr. Sizlak, I have a feeling there's going to be one more act to this story.
Well, I'm not hanging around for that. Four acts.
Structure and themes, we've already touched on this a little bit, but is this a good adaptation of Jerusalem's Lot?
No. Nope.
All right, why?
Because Jerusalem's Lot is a very compact and intimate story of a man's personal history and lineage, where this very much branches out into a bunch of side characters.
Is it a good adaptation of Jerusalem's Lot with the restriction that it had to be 10 hours worth of TV time?
No, I still don't think so.
Do you have a reason, particular reason why not? Because it does do what you said. But it just also...
It does it very poorly because it's focusing on too much else.
I didn't think so. Yeah. I thought...
I really didn't like the show, spoiler.
I really like this show. Yeah. This is going to rank pretty high for me.
Yeah.
I love just about every second of it. I have a couple gripes, and I have really mixed feelings about the ending. But overall, I liked it a lot. I liked it more than like 95% of everything else we've watched.
Wow.
But I mean, it is there. Like, his descent... His madness, it starts with his backstory, well, sort of with his relationship with his father, his wife dying, and then him and his kids moving to this new place. And it starts with him on sort of stable ground, and it's just kind of a slow descent until he, like, ultimately hits rock bottom in, like, episode 7 when he has the book, like, tied around his chest, and he almost throws his kids up in a noose at, like... I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a good story of his descent into madness, but it just had additional things. Had the show been 3 or 4 episodes long instead of 10 episodes long, it could have been a more compact version of the story that's in the short story and been a little more true. But I think, to me, it's a good adaptation of the short story, but it just has a lot of extra stuff because of what it is. But to me, it's a better adaptation of Salem's Lot than of Jerusalem's Lot. The whole time I was watching this, I was not comparing it to Jerusalem's Lot.
Yeah, I was.
I was comparing it to Salem's Lot.
Hmm.
Because I think it has a lot more in common with the novel Salem's Lot than the short story Jerusalem's Lot.
I can see that.
It about someone with a troubled past who's going to this small town in Maine where they have family history. When they get there, he, you know, not welcomed by the majority of the populace. The people who live there are maybe sometimes outwardly friendly, but inward they have their own sins, their own struggles. You spend a lot of time seeing about the shitty things that are going on in their homes and their backstories. A lot of that little evil that we were talking about. And then it starts with like this epidemic that's like going, people are dying, people are like losing blood, they're just weakening. It's like the same plot beats that happen with Salem's Lot, and there people are talking about blaming it on the new people who have moved to town. It's a little bit of a twist because, you know, he's a descendant of people who had previously lived there, and then about halfway through it's revealed that there's vampires, and then the latter part of it is different, but the build up to it is very much the same. And all these different characters that we've been following throughout the first half, they kind of band together in the second half to make this like Dracula Salem's Lot-esque team of people who had put their differences aside to fight against the vampires. If I were recommending this to someone, I would say it uses the short story of Jerusalem's Lot as kind of like a setting, but it's really actually an adaptation of Salem's Lot. And for me, I enjoyed it more than both of the Salem's Lot miniseries. This is closer, the settings aside, in terms of like production and acting and writing, this is a lot closer to what I would want from a Salem's Lot adaptation than either of the miniseries. It's to the point where you get like direct parallels between different characters. There's so many similarities between Minister Burroughs and Father Callahan, the sinful preacher who's dealing with their own struggle of faith and their own personal sins. One is adultery, one is drinking. It's okay, I'm talking too much.
I was just gonna let you keep going.
I really like the show. I think it's great. Let's talk about themes. Small town horror. What did you think about the small town horror?
It was good for the first three episodes.
What got worse?
They revealed too much too quickly. I know there's vampires, and I know that there's going to be a cult because I've read the stories. But in terms of pacing, it's like, I think it's by, I didn't write notes like when this stuff was happening. Like when you get like the baby born without eyes, that's great. You got like the little girl sick, you got people are suspicious of the new people, and you got like the preacher's cheating on his wife, but like there's still this weird shit going on and they don't really know the cause of it. And then you got the dude who's like going to burn Chapelwaite. And then a dude's just in the middle of the road cuts off his horse's head or kills his horse.
That was so sweet.
That was great.
That was great.
And, like, again, I know that's a vampire, like, because, again, I've read the stories. I know what's going to be going on. I kind of have, like, a grasp of things ahead of time. But it's like, by episode five, you're maybe it's six, but you're having, Adrian Brody. What's his character's name?
Charles Boone.
Boone. He's sitting and having, like, a full conversation with the head vampire. And by then, it's like, well, okay, the big appeal to small-town horror of me is all of, like, the build-up and the mystery and what is the worm and the weird, like, shit that he's seeing. That's the kind of shit that I like.
Well, it's the same way in Salem's Lot. Like, the vampires show up at the midway point of the novel. And, Jacob shows up at the midway point of the show.
Yeah. The big difference is when you're sitting there reading a book and the midway point is like 250 pages, as opposed to 2 hours or 3-4 hours.
It's like 4 or 5.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, they kept revealing way too much and I kept getting distracted by a bunch of the other stuff that was going on. Mostly, I didn't like any of the kids. I would have completely cut them out of the show.
Kids are my favorite characters.
Yeah, I didn't like any of them.
I think Lo is my favorite character.
Which one was that?
The one that turns into a vampire.
That's my least favorite character. That's my opinion on the small town horror of it, is I think a bunch of it just got shown way too quickly. I would have liked either more build up or to make it shorter.
So I would actually say the exact opposite. Like, nothing explicitly happens with vampires until episode 5, which is the halfway point of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this doesn't say good things about me, but I forgot about vampires until you see Stephen Boone and his fangs, and I went, oh shit, he's a vampire! Oh wait.
Yeah.
Because I forgot, because it's not very explicit in the short story about them being vampires.
Yeah, why I like the short story, is because it's not very explicit.
And then, so I wasn't actually thinking that there were going to be vampires in this show.
I would not have shown them, like, at all.
I was thinking it was just going to be a cult of bad people.
Yeah.
And then the vampires threw me completely by surprise, and I thought it was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the better, like, modern interpretations of vampires. I can't think of anything else from, like, the past 10 years that I like more than this. Granted, I don't watch nearly as much horror or vampire media as you do, so...
Yeah.
Evil versus evil, big evil vampires, little e evil.
Racism.
Yeah, but racism, cheating on your wife, abusing your children, like all the various things.
Vandalism,
throwing fucking flour in a little girl's face while she's trying to trick or treat.
Yeah, you gotta make her white. I think that's what the joke, or not joke, like the implication was.
Oh,
I might have been wrong. I was like, was that like a thing that racists used to do?
Maybe.
I'm gonna look that up later.
That never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
So that's directly out of Salem's Lot.
Mm.
You get a lot of vignettes with the townspeople, like you do in Salem's Lot. There's a lot of subplots, which, like you do in Salem's Lot, which is probably why I got so, like, hooked on it in the first few episodes, because it was just reminding me of all my favorite things from the novel. Xenophobia, racism, not so much xenophobia in that, like, they're, like... Well, I didn't know it is xenophobia, because the Boons are... Or at least the new Boons.
Mm-hmm.
They're not from Maine. They're not from Preacher's Corners.
Yeah, I was going to say xenophobia seems right.
Yeah, and racism.
Yeah, it's both.
Yeah,
it's racism towards the kids, and it's xenophobia towards the family.
Yeah. So Charles Boone he went off to sea and became a sailor, and a whaler, fuck him, but... and he married a woman of Asian descent. Like, it's the show starts with them in the Sea of Japan, so I was like, oh, he married a Japanese woman. But then as it went on, I was like, oh, actually, I think they're supposed to be, like, Pacific Islanders of some sort.
I was trying to figure that out, because I thought they were Japanese in the first, and I was like, oh, God, Daniel, you're showing your racism. Or you're showing, I get...
Well, it starts in the Sea of Japan.
Yeah, that's the reason. And I'm like, wait, are they, like... And then I was like, well, I guess Japan and Hawaii have kind of had, like, this sort of complicated history, and...
I mean, a lot of islands out there have, and they mentioned a couple times that their mom was from an island, mm-hmm. and one of the kids at one point says, I want to go back to the island.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Japan is a chain of islands, so they could mean that, but...
Then you had, like, the Hawaiian shells on the...
The shells. They're also a little dark-complected, but obviously there are people in Japan, especially, like, Okinawa and the southern parts, who are dark-complected as well, so that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But that was just kind of, like, the impression I got that they were from some island in the South Pacific, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, they're not white, and the people of Preacher's Corners...
Point that out
pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of them, not all of them, but the majority.
Enough of them,
yeah, to make them very uncomfortable. Plagues and epidemics.
Well, hey, hold on, I got something for this.
Mm-hmm.
Point the island nation of Hawaii on the map.
The Kingdom of Hawaii.
Yeah, the Kingdom of Hawaii. I was like, oh my god, really?
What?
It was just, I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, Jesus Christ, teacher. When she said that to the Hawaiian kid. Or
oh.
The...
Oh.
You'll know where that is.
I just thought they were studying geography that night. That never...
Yeah, because they look Hawaiian.
Yeah, they do. You're
and right. She's wearing like the necklace,
the shells,
and
the yeah.
And all of a sudden they're like, "Oh, Jesus Christ!" It'd be like if they had the black student was like,
"Where's Nigeria?"
Point to Nigeria.
Yeah. Okay. Now I see what you're saying. Sometimes I'm a little naive.
Yeah. I actually thought that scene was pretty good.
Yeah.
Because I always prefer in media when they do like subtle racism. That's kind of like
throwing flour in somebody's face.
No, that's more like overt racism. That's
I know. That's sarcasm.
I'm sitting there and I'm like, I really like it whenever people will call it like systemic racism, mm-hmm. or I'm trying to remember the phrase that people use. There's racism that's like everyday racism, like, oh, you're good at basketball because you're black. It's you don't think it's an insult. But it's still 100% like, what the fuck? And that's what that scene made me think of.
Well, systemic racism means racism...
That's built, in the system.
Into society, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the phrase that people used to use for this, and I just am blanking on it.
I don't have any preferences on how racism is shown in my media.
I just always think that it's not cool, but it's neat when a media, acknowledges and shows that sort of side of racism. As opposed to, over-the-top racism, which does exist, and they did also show. Mm-hmm. But, it showed, the
it
spectrum. Yeah. That I liked.
Yeah, you can have your cheeseburger racism or your chicken sandwich racism.
Yeah.
It's a buffet.
I just think that it was a good portrayal of how that would probably be displayed, not even just back then, but, in everyday.
Yeah, if the black kid moves to town and they're not really welcome, and they go to geography class, and... They have little white Susie point out where Canada is, and they have little white Johnny point out where the UK is, mm-hmm. and then little black Jimmy comes up and he says, "Okay, can you point out the Republic of the Congo?"
Something like that.
Yeah, so. Which doesn't seem like naive people like me would just go, "Oh yeah, we need to know where that country is,"
yeah,
and don't even realize, "Oh,
yeah,
that's kind of gross."
So I like that.
Yeah. Plagues and epidemics, like I said in my big rant, it starts with an epidemic just like Salem's Lot does. People are dying of what seems like consumption. They're blaming it on chapel weight in the same way that in Salem's Lot, some people blame it on the Marston House. And I didn't even mention that. The biggest parallel of all is the Marston House versus chapel weight itself. They're both about... small towns that are dealing with spooky fucking houses.
Yeah.
Which, I'm a big fan of haunted house things. So that was another big pro for me. Vampires. So tell me what you didn't like about... aside from what you've already said, that they gave away too much too quickly. What else did you not like about the vampires in this show?
There's just too much of them. They were on screen a lot.
They were.
I think that works best if you have, a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And, he's a character...
Mm-hmm.
Like Dracula, and even you don't get a lot
you
of Dracula
lot
in, the
of them, yeah.
in the original. That's about the level of vampire I want in my vampire media is either that, unless the vampires are the main characters and it's about the weird and cool shit they can do. But that's a completely different type of enjoyment. By the time we reach the house siege, I'm not afraid of these things anymore. I've just seen too much of them.
Well, I was never afraid of them to begin with.
Yeah.
That this show generally didn't scare me at all. That wasn't really the appeal for me. I like the vampires, but I'm also not in love with them. It's not, to me, that's not where the appeal lies. That's just the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the kind of story that they're telling.
I would have liked more of I would have liked them to be already in the story. They were in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
More of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was Bruno.
But I would have liked more just more of that, as opposed to, like, sitting down and having full conversations and them showing up and trying to make bargains. That's my preference for when you're trying to play it as the spooky small-town horror show.
I don't think that I so much have a preference for it to be one way or the other. I think I watch it, and it either works for me or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And this one happened to work for me, and it didn't work for you.
Yeah.
Which is cool. That's fine. Gives us something to talk about. Fatherhood, big theme in this, both with Captain Brody and his father,
mm-hmm.
and with his children, and then the minister and his children who die, plus his illegitimate children, plus Stephen Boone and his daughter who died. I can't remember her name. Plus, and his father, Philip Boone, and then Jacob, the head vampire, is kind of like the fatherhood figure for his, like, whole clan. There's lots of, like, father and child relationships, and you get to see, like, the, maybe not the best, but, like, you get to see some good fathers, some bad fathers, some fathers who do good and do bad. And then it kind of ends on, like, a father making the ultimate sacrifice for his kids, which I said earlier, I have mixed feelings about the ending. We'll bury the lead on that for a while. We'll talk about that later, but fatherhood is a big theme at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, like, something intrinsic about vampires and fatherhood, because at least for male vampires, when they create another vampire, it's creating a life, quote-unquote life, of sorts. And their blood is sperm.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Characters. And there's a huge cast.
There's so many people.
I have, like, the Brodies, kind of the core vampires, and then just, like the two or three most important people from the town.
Mm-hmm.
If we talked about everybody, it would just, like, take forever. So let's start with our main character, who's Captain Charles Boone, played by Adrian Brody. I know you don't like the Batman voice.
The whisper talking, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't either.
Yeah.
But
I honestly found it super distracting.
I got through the Dark Knight trilogy. I got through this. So
I think the reason I give it a pass on the Dark Knight trilogy is I'm like, well, yeah, he doesn't want people to recognize his voice. Where I'm sitting here going, why are you whispering?
That's how he talks.
Yeah, there were a lot of times I had to keep turning subtitles on because I couldn't understand what he was saying.
It bothered me in the first episode, but I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Just like, it bothered me a lot in Batman Begins, but I kind of just forgot about it in the second two movies. I think Adrian Brody, he's a great actor.
He is a great actor.
I think he does a great job in this. Even if I didn't like it, I think I would still get, like, some appreciation out of his performance. He does, like, sad and depressed and, like subtle, like, going crazy, like, very well. I loved, like, all his scenes with the worms. Even though I wasn't crazy about the worms because it was very, like, obvious, like...
On the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the nose.
In the nose, yeah.
Coming out of the nose.
Pulling it right out of your skull brain.
But I love, like, his reactions to all of those...
Anytime he was going cuckoo bananas, I liked it.
Yeah.
Like when he's building the nooses in the basement.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, which one's for Sayori? I need to make a meme for Heth.
Yep. Yeah, that was... Honestly, that was probably my favorite episode, because I just felt like I was watching, like, a mini adaptation of The Shining.
Yeah.
But that was great. I like him a little less when he gets his sanity back, but... I mean, that's kind of how the story should go. So
we're going to tie this book to a vampire, so you'll be okay for a minute.
Well, it has to stay with them.
Yeah.
It's fantasy rules. Like, the book has to be with one of the undead, so put it with one of the undead.
Yeah, they found a creative solution.
Yeah. They found a solution.
Modern problems require modern solutions.
They do. Then the chillins, like, I really like the kids. Why did you not like the kids?
I didn't think any of them could act really all that well.
Oh, I thought they were all pretty good.
I think the boy did the best job, and the rest of them I just didn't really think did a good job. I found their plot lines distracting from the shit that I'm actually interested in. When it tied back, it was okay, But otherwise, I was just like, I'd just go back to Adrian Brody is what I was thinking most of the time.
Well, maybe that's just a difference between... Because I related to the father making sacrifices for his children. So I was most interested in his relationship with his kids. So maybe that's just a difference between me and you. Because that's where I saw the most, like... That's where I related most to the character.
It's not the story that I wanted from this adaptation, I guess. I was going in expecting an adaptation of something a lot more compact, and then I'm getting a lot more, and I'm sitting there going, I want to go back to this.
Yeah, but I knew from the beginning that that was not how it was going to be. So I was telling myself from the very beginning, there's no way that this is going to be a straight adaptation of the short story because it's 10 hours long.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that expectation, so I wasn't let down by it because I knew it wasn't going to be that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Emily Hampshire, Rebecca Morgan. I really liked her. I thought she was a little too compliant at some points. I wish she would have like let him have some shit at one point or another. I think when they all freaked out about her writing that story, I think they were a little sensitive and they needed to get over it. But maybe that's just me. Maybe if somebody wrote a story about my cursed family, I would get upset too.
Yeah, no, I think what she was doing was super uncool, but I mean, I probably also would have been writing about them, so I would have been super fascinated by it, like cursed family, weird shit's going on in town.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be attracted to the... Maybe I wouldn't put it down on paper, though.
She had to for her job.
Yeah.
She was writing for a magazine. A very prominent magazine.
Very prominent magazine.
I have this job. I was really disappointed we never got to see them. Skronk. I wanted to see that. We got, like... You had that last... One of the last scenes in the last episode. You get to see Adrian Brody with nothing but, like, a white sheet covering his junk. And I'm like, this is it. It's finally going to happen. Like, nope. Which is fine. It's not that kind of show. Which,
yeah.
Honestly, I prefer. But I just think they're both really attractive. And I wanted to see him knock boots.
It's sort of funny. Because in the last episode, she's like, and there went the only man I ever loved. And I was sitting there like, oh. I guess I missed that part. Because most of the time, I didn't get that sort of vibe from either one of them.
They had a love confession scene.
Yeah, I blanked from my memory. I was sitting there like, wow.
He told her he loved her in the last episode before he left. She said something like, I'm going to watch over your kids forever, whether they want me to or not. And he said, they will. You're their family now. They've grown to love you. As have I.
Yeah. I just didn't, like, all the stuff leading up to that, I was like...
You were probably checked out.
I was very checked out. I was just sitting there, and I'm like... To me, it just seemed like she was just kind of there most of the time. To me, she was the most Lovecraftian character in the show, because she's compelled to see all of the shit through.
Yeah, she...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
And I'm sitting there like, yeah, I would stick... Because, again, I relate to that. I'm like, I would stick around to see what's going on. And to me, that's the vibe I was getting, was like, she just really wanted to know.
Well, it was...
As opposed to, like, any romantic intent. But maybe I'm just not that much of a romantic.
I mean, they explicitly say... her mom tells her to leave a couple times, and she... She says once explicitly, I can't leave those kids. I love them like they're my own now. And she...
Yeah, like, I remember her saying that, but I'm like, I'm not, like... I keep forgetting that stuff. Because I'm not buying it whenever everything else around her seems to be more driven by what can I find out.
Yeah, it's not like a romance. Like, the romance in it is extremely subtle. It may be effective for some and not effective for others, but... I can definitely understand, like, not focusing on that because it's not a big part of it.
Yeah. But whenever she's, like her writing the paper and her investigating, that's the shit I like about Small Town Horror. And that's why I think I like that character.
Yeah, I like that character a lot. Yeah. Probably, so, for favorite character, I said Loa earlier. It's probably between Loa and Minister Burroughs. who's played by Gord Rand, who is look at his picture. He's a bit of a sexy man himself.
He does not look like that in the show.
No, well, he doesn't have a beard in the show.
Women are right. Beards are makeup for men.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because he's not unattractive in the show, but he's not like Silver Fox Daddy.
I would have called him Scarecrow-y in the show.
Mm-hmm.
He looks kind of lanky, kind of what's the word like when your cheekbones are sucking in?
Governor Tarkin?
Yeah, I guess. There's a word for this, but I cannot remember it for the life of me. I'm failing on words tonight. But yeah, no, with a beard, he can get it.
He's probably my favorite subplot. I really like the conflict between him and his wife and his father-in-law, and then his vampire, quote-unquote, whore that he has on the side that he had a child with. Oh, wait, he didn't have a child. It was actually the vampire's kid. And he tells his wife that right before she poisons him. And I'm sitting there while he's eating that soup. She puts up in that soup. She's not eating that soup.
Yeah, I don't
know. She's just eating the bread.
I don't know why he would have trusted her enough to go in the house in the first place.
Because he's a Christian. Because they have to trust everybody. They have to forgive. I knew, like, as soon as she came up to him in the street and was acting completely different, like, something's up. Like, she feels like a totally different character. Yeah. I wouldn't go with her.
Hey, that's what I was thinking.
And then she's dishing up that soup for him, and, like, she has a bowl, but you never see her eat it. I'm like, oh, this is bad. But I kind of liked that. Like, it's somebody had, like, a tragic, like one of the big differences between Salem's Lot and this for me is obviously a lot of the characters live in this. Sort of. But it's not like Salem's Lot where by the end of it, it's only Ben and Mark left standing. Two of the kids survive and Rebecca survives and a couple of the side characters and Charles and Loa are vampires, but they're not, I mean, they are dead, but you know what I mean. But it was nice to see, like, just, like, a really, like, gross, tragic death in this, like, pretty dreary horror story that doesn't have, like, a whole lot of happy things in it. So I thought his story was appropriate. And then when his mistress, Faith, when she got ambushed and just, like, stabbed, like, 40 times. They never said what happened to the baby. I just realized that.
They took it, I guess. I don't know.
They did take it. Like, it shows them taking it. And he asks the Apple Girl, I think.
That's season two. It's the baby.
Oh.
Revenge of the Worm. It's the worm.
All right. So, I guess let's talk about... Well, let's finish characters, then we'll talk about that. Because I don't really have a spot for it. I mean, you haven't really said anything about Minister Burroughs. Did you not like him or his story?
He was more... If I'm gonna put us on a spectrum of things I liked and things I didn't like, he's closer to things I liked.
Mm-hmm.
But you hit all the the big highlights, and especially because he tied into the stuff that I was digging about the show, like the creepy baby and I think maybe my biggest problem is there was just maybe one or two many subplots. I don't know which one you cut. I would have kept the priest one.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you got the creepy baby, and that's right from the short story, and it's tying in with all the other weird shit going on.
I like all the subplots, but I will agree that they definitely work better in a 500-page novel as opposed to a 10-episode TV series.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm getting distracted, is how I would describe it when I'm watching the show.
Yeah, and that's fair.
Yeah. I got a few characters confused for a while. Like, I got the preacher's father-in-law and the sheriff confused, like, two or three times.
There's at least, like, a 20-year age difference between them, so I didn't have that issue.
Yeah.
I
was like, which one's that supposed to be again? Okay, this is the sheriff.
Constable.
Yeah, constable. Yeah, he's a constable. I like the constable, too.
Yeah, I like... So that's Constable Dennison, played by Hugh Thompson.
He cracked me up.
Yeah. I did like him, and I thought his wife, the lady who plays his wife, was actually, like, one of the better performances. Like, this, maybe this is gross, but, like, when she's, like, on her knees, like, drinking the blood out of Philip Boone's arm, and she's, like, and also the scenes where he's, like, feeding her mm-hmm. from his wrist in the Chapel Waite basement, and she's, like, slobbering the knob. But it was, like, it was one of, like, the spookier... I didn't find this very scary, but that was one of the, like, more ominous things in the show.
It was unsettling.
Yeah, unsettling.
And it was also... Okay, when I say believably,
for what it is,
it was believably unsettling, because I can, like, see a scenario where a dude's, like, wife or lover or best friend even is all of a sudden a vampire, and, like, what do?
Yeah, you smother her with a pillow, which accidentally actually kills her and turns her into a vampire.
And, you know, like, it kind of spirals from there. I'm like, yeah, I can see a scenario where some woman I'm really into is a vampire, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I'm giving her my blood.
I was honestly surprised that he ended up going along with exposing his wife to the rest of the town.
Mm.
I really thought the conflict was going to be that he would try to keep Boone from doing that, or he would end up letting her turn him. But, I mean, obviously, it worked out the way it did, because otherwise the townsfolk wouldn't have gotten on their side. Not that all those extra people really did any good in the Battle of Jerusalem slot.
Yeah.
They all pretty much just died. But I guess, you know, we need to see some people die in the last episode.
So. Yeah. I mean, all my favorite deaths before that were, like... The dude with the horse. That's my favorite one, probably, in the series.
That one was really good. My favorite one, without a doubt, is when they harpoon Philip Boone.
That's all. Like, I was waiting for us to get to him, because I'm like, you keep criticizing him for being a whaler, but we got that scene.
That, I mean, he's a shithead. Let the whales live. But that was really cool.
We need our important whale oil.
They harpoon him and then pull him up through a second story window, pin him to a wall and cut his fucking head off, and then hurl his head at his son.
Like, I thought that was, like, so stupid but made so much sense and was so cool to see that I was like, okay, I'll forgive this.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's definitely like a show. In some ways it's over the top, but it takes itself very seriously.
Yeah.
And that was, like, one of the few moments where you felt like they were trying to have a little bit more fun and let their hair down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was good.
I was laughing the whole time, and I was like, yeah, get him!
Yeah, I thought it was great.
I was actually having a good time at that part. And then throwing the head back out.
That was just great.
I'm like, yeah, because that's what you do.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do.
Yeah, because you're like, who's next?
Okay, so let's talk about the vampires, and well, briefly about Philip and Stephen Boone, because they're really more important to, like, the premise than they are, like, the actual plot themselves.
Which one's which? Because I keep getting their names backwards.
I had to come up with a mnemonic.
Okay.
P comes before S, Philip came before Stephen. So Philip's the older one, Stephen's
okay,
the
so
younger one.
So Philip's, like, the really old, decrepit one.
No, that's Jacob.
That's Jacob, okay.
But the two Boones. We'll talk about the two Boones. And then Jacob is the Crypt Keeper.
Okay, we'll talk about the Boones first.
Yeah, so they're Charles's cousin and uncle. They're the ones who faked their deaths. Well, they didn't really fake their deaths, but they sort of faked their deaths.
Yeah.
Let him inherit the house and brought him back so he could succumb to the curse and find the book for them. They aren't so much characters in terms of, like, screen time and plot action, but they are very important characters in terms of, like, the premise,
like, backstory
and
lore.
My issue is, like you just said, I kept getting the two of them confused, and I thought it would have, why couldn't they have just been one character?
Because then you couldn't have that scene where one throws his daughter down the stairs.
Yeah. And also the throwing the head back at the sun.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, that's true. But
that's really the only reason you couldn't just condense them.
Yeah, because I was constantly getting confused as to which was which. But honestly, it didn't even really matter, because they both do the same thing and serve the same purpose.
Yeah.
And also they're Bruno and they live in the walls and we don't talk about Steven. Yeah, yeah. Except Steven eats the rats instead of making them do telenovelas.
I don't know why I find that so funny.
All right, let's talk about the more important one, Jacob, played by Christopher Heyerdahl. All
right, now, I found most of the vampires when they were on screen to be kind of goofy, which is another one of my... Like, when they were in the shadows and stuff before, I was kind of digging it.
Yeah.
And I think that's another, like, strength of books, like, when you're imagining something yourself, as opposed to when it's, like, actually on screen.
And then Barlow jumps out and he's blue and bald.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I agree. I think it was better when you could see less of them and when it was super dark. And
but, you know, you also kind of have, because of the way a 10-episode TV show works, you have to have a reveal.
Yeah, you can't. If it were a 2-hour movie, then you could keep them in the shadows for the majority of it and maybe reveal them like for like the last little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a longer form story, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, and Jacob also does the whisper talking.
Does.
And
granted, though, he is at least an old man.
Yeah. And this is a personal problem. This isn't, like, calling, like, Adrian or this dude a bad actor.
Mm-hmm.
I get chronic ear infections, so a lot of times I literally cannot hear what's going on.
I also had to turn on the subtitles for some of these episodes, and a lot of them were the ones where... It had Jacob,
yeah.
Or like that initial conversation between Jacob and Charles Boone.
I had to watch it twice.
I didn't watch it twice, but I did watch it with subtitles.
Yeah, just that conversation, and I had to keep because I also find subtitles distracting.
I don't use subtitles, but when I was younger, I watched anime and subtitles all the time. But mm-hmm. Now it's really just like when I can't hear,
yeah,
that I have to use them. So
I had to do that a few times.
Yeah.
That's my only real criticism is what I was building up in my, and that's maybe not fair. I see that you have the Apple Girl listed down here. I need to apologize to Shell Girl. This was the worst actor in the show. I didn't like the Apple Girl. I thought she was really over the top.
I will not argue with you. She was definitely very over the top.
It might not be mean to call her a bad actress.
She's also as an adult compared to the child you were.
To tell people, you're acting, I'm going to criticize you.
I tend to be a little easier on child actors.
She felt like she was from a different show half the time. She felt like she was in something campy when she was on screen.
I agree. I didn't hate her, but I didn't like her very much. My favorite part was watching her get stabbed in the chest.
Yeah, that was good.
I was actually hoping that Loa was just going to... She would never get to become a vampire, and that would be, like, the end of her story, is that when Loa, like, goes to feed on her, she just kills her and drinks all her blood, and she's like, but they promised me I would become one of them.
I thought for sure that's what was going to happen,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's so. What I thought. But she got stabbed in the chest.
Because almost the whole show is built on this, like, idea of broken promises.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, wow, they actually kept it for her.
It was still a broken promise of sorts, because,
yeah.
You know, she wanted to live forever, and she got to be a vampire for about 30 minutes, so...
Could you imagine, like, you finally get immortality, and then
and you immediately die. That, I mean, maybe that is good, because that is kind of, like, super ironic.
That is kind of funny.
And maybe it's worse that you got, like, a brief taste of immortality.
Feeling so strong.
Yeah, and then just to have it ripped away by a child.
Yeah.
So maybe that is worse. I don't know. It's just not what I was expecting. Okay, but for the only other thing I wanted to say is I was kind of taken aback by Jacob's character design, like, right off the bat, because I was like, oh, it's the Crypt Keeper!
Yeah.
I got used to it as the show went on, but it was kind of weird to begin with.
I did think it was kind of weird. I also don't know how I would have changed it. I think it's better than Salem's Lot miniseries.
Yes.
But then again, what isn't? I'll be mean to Salem's Lot miniseries here again for a minute.
I mean, they made a blue vampire. So
But when you're dead, you're blue.
I guess.
I guess, yeah.
I guess so.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else to say about the vampire. I did like that whenever they were having, like, their final stand, they were painting crosses on the house.
That was cool.
I was like, you know what? Like, yeah. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
I like that episode a lot because I really like siege stories.
I like siege stories.
And, yeah, I agree with you that they weren't that scary, but it was still threatening in that they were invading the home, but not so much because they were scary vampires. Just, you know, they were outnumbered. There were people crawling around in the walls. I still had fun with it.
Yeah. You could have almost made them not be vampires and still be just as scary.
Yeah, I do think you're right. I think ultimately there should have been fewer vampires. Maybe it would have just been like Jacob and the Boons.
I didn't have a great time watching this, but there's a lot of really good in it.
Yeah, there definitely. And I can see seeing high highs and low lows.
And my biggest criticism is I kept getting distracted, and maybe that's just my stupid brain. But
yeah, and I was actually pretty zeroed in on it the whole time I was watching, which is honestly unusual for me because I actually don't watch a lot of quote unquote television. Usually watch movies or YouTube.
Yeah.
So maybe I was able to focus on it more because I don't watch a ton of television. Like, generally for me, it's just like keeping up with Star Wars and Star Trek and a couple other things.
That's already a lot.
Yeah, so much. I'm like a year behind on Star Trek.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're never going to be able to catch up if you wait much longer.
Yeah. Well, they released 5 seasons of different shows last year.
Jesus Christ.
Star Trek Discovery Season 4, Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 1, Star Trek Picard Season 2, Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, and the other animated one, the one with Janeway. I forget what it's called, but the other animated one, season one of that. So they released 5 new seasons of shows last year.
Do we ever get a Borg origin?
In Voyager.
Okay.
In Voyager.
I was just curious.
Voyager is like the Borg show.
Okay. I always liked the Borg.
They're my favorite Star Trek villain, for sure. We talked recently about how one of the main characters is a reformed Borg. The Borg also weigh into, like, the series conclusion is a conflict with the Borg, and the Borg are a regular enemy on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the last episode of Star Trek Voyager is called Endgame. So when Avengers Endgame came out, all of the Star Trek pages were posting, like, memes with Captain Janeway with, like, her cup of coffee, like, we've already done this.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Kill you all! I'll drive you crazy, and I'll kill you all! I'm every nightmare you ever had! I am your worst dream come true! I'm everything you ever were afraid of!
Okay, scary shit. We've already answered this, but whatever. Yeah. Is this show scary?
Not really.
No.
I mean, I think there's potential for things in there.
There are things I found ominous.
Yeah.
There were things I found unsettling, things I found gross.
And those, minus the gross, those were my favorite parts. I don't do gross very well, especially I don't like worms.
Yeah, no, it was effective, but it wasn't really enjoyable to watch. But which is what they were going for.
Yeah, I mean, like, mission accomplished.
The one thing that really did kind of freak me out was the asylum.
I like the asylum. When we did our, like, Stephen King It episode and I criticized the asylum, It Chapter 2. This I actually like because I was like, well, yeah, that's what they used to be like.
Yeah, we have an old mental hospital near us that I've toured twice.
It's great.
It is so great. And they go into a lot about how they used to treat patients back in this exact time frame. And a lot of stuff that they were talking about, like the ice baths and the
Lobotomies.
Lobotomies and, like, that's
the guy who invented the lobotomy got a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
they thought he cured madness.
I mean, I guess if you fuck up somebody's brain, they're not going to be mad anymore.
Yeah.
So in a way, he kind of did. We talked about the vampires. The tone, I think I like, generally speaking, I like the tone. I like it's... It's dark, it's ominous, it's dour.
I like the tone.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Midnight Mass.
Yeah. I've still only seen the first episode. I figure I was going to add like a spot in our season 3 schedule to just do an episode on Midnight Mass. Yeah. So I'm kind of...
The tone is very similar.
Yeah.
And like the way it's filmed.
Yeah.
And framed.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And yeah. I enjoyed... For the majority, I enjoyed the production in terms of the settings, the costumes, the music, the makeup. Like, all of that stuff is mostly really good. Probably one of the things I like the most about it is Chapel Waite itself. They used a real house. That was a house that existed that they used for the filming. It's not something that they built.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. And I love the house. Like, it's... again, I'm really into, like, spooky haunted house stories. And when you turn that spooky haunted house into a siege story. But it's also kind of like The Shining, where this guy is just slowly going crazy. And he eventually tries to go nuts on his kids. Like, I really like that part of it. This is what everybody really wants. Kiss Me Fat Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Salem's Lot, Hot or Not, round number 2. And we have a late entry. Somebody I forgot to add to it.
Okay.
And we've already answered this, but I wanted to add him anyway. So, Gord Rand.
Yeah.
Who plays Minister Burroughs. Look, and I have a link to a Google Drive with the pictures. So the number one is Gord Rand with his sexy beard. It's his IMDb picture. Is he hot or not?
With a beard, yes. Without a beard, no.
Yes, I agree.
You need the makeup.
He looks
better there.
Yeah, he looks... the short
gaunt.
Hair.
Gaunt is the word I was thinking of. He looked gaunt in Chapel Waite.
Yeah, and also, like, he has that goofy, like, New England Puritan kind of long curly hair.
Yeah.
And that stupid, like, triangle hat.
Yeah.
It's harder, but we're watching a trailer for something on his IMDb page, and he doesn't have a beard, but he looks pretty good.
Yeah, he looks pretty good in it. Yeah, I'll say hot.
Just real. He's apparently in The Handmaid's Tale, one episode of it. Transplant. I don't think I've seen anything else he's been in. Okay. Next one, a Nazi killer. Hot or not? I forget the old guy from Return to Salem's Lot.
Okay, killing Nazis is hot, but he doesn't work for me.
I don't find him physically attractive.
Yeah.
But if he wanted me, I might feel obligated to give him a little love. Maybe I wouldn't let him penetrate me. But if he wanted like a little hand job or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's a Holocaust survivor. He killed a bunch of Nazis. Like
maybe I'll put on the SS uniform and we can roleplay.
Sure you haven't read App Pupil?
I'm pretty sure.
Alright, moving on. Apple Girl!
I think she's physically attractive, but I didn't like her acting.
I would say she's physically attractive, but I can't handle how dirty she is. Also, all of the scars from the bite marks.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that the dirtiness, that's extra flavor.
I can't handle, like, dirty Ed. Like, if she took a shower, like, I could get over the scars. Like,
I think we have to take her as is, though. Do we take her as is?
No, you're right. We have to take her as is. So I'm going to say no,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Her booty hole probably stank.
Oh, definitely. They didn't have, like, a shower house in Jerusalem's Lot.
Yeah.
I think they just live in the mud all the time. And that's another thing.
It chained up outside.
I like that first scene when he's riding into Jerusalem's
that's
Lot.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, that was good. 1979, Kurt Barlow.
Nope.
So, this was bothering me the whole time I was watching Chapel Waite.
Hey.
I was looking at the bite marks, and I was like, those teeth... Like, the puncture wounds are way too close together. And then I realized when you got like a really good shot on Jacob that he has, instead of the canines,
yeah,
it's like the two front teeth.
Yeah, like a rat.
And then I looked at this picture and I realized they have Barlow the same way.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of weird. But, I mean, yeah. And then Jacob from Chapelwaite. Hot or not?
Yeah, not for me.
You've never wanted to fuck somebody so hard you could literally turn them into dust?
I mean, I have, but...
Okay. Well, for the sake of unity, I'll say no to. All right, and then Judge Axel from A Return to Salem's Lot.
I'll be honest, I like how wet he looks. Like, look at that, he's glistening.
Yeah, and I think, like, with those long... fingers, he could really give like a really good reach around.
Yeah, yeah, that hot.
I'm in it. Vampire Brody.
Those eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can stare into them for days.
Bite me, Adrian. Bite me. Definitely hot. Becca Morgan.
Yeah,
she's a cutie.
Yeah, she's cute.
Okay.
I like how we went into such detail for her.
I mean, she's an attractive woman.
Yeah. Like, what are you gonna say?
Yeah.
Oh my God, are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
So we're moving on to Kings and Koontz. What is your king for Chapelwaite?
Like the first four episodes?
Yeah.
I would say, it's the same, like when, it's my same criticism for the short story, is I liked all of the build-up.
I think I agree in that I like the first half more than the second half.
And I will say that I appreciated the restraint the show had in not showing a giant CGI worm monster.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
Yeah, I was ready for that to be my Koontz, and I was like, oh, or maybe my king, because it just looked good.
So I really liked the eclipse. I thought the eclipse and like the blacked out sky, I thought that looked really good. And I was thinking, they are going to ruin that with some awful-looking worm. But they didn't, so yeah.
I was like, you know what? I have to give them... I was actually really happy with that. I was shockingly happy. Like, I was getting ready to text you.
I liked the last episode in general, but I have mixed feelings about the actual, like, ending. We'll talk about that. We'll do that right before ranking.
But yeah, I think all of the build-up that they did... When they were setting up Mystery, I thought they did a really good job. That's my king. Is just they knew how to do build up.
For me, it's just Adrian Brody. I've been a big fan of him since I saw him in The Pianist in high school. And I don't give a shit about the Academy Awards, but he won Best Actor for that movie, and it's very well deserved. So I just like seeing him, and it was nice to see him in a longer form piece of content, really be able to have a lot of screen time and show a lot of range of emotions. And so I'm going to say it's him / the episode where he goes nuck and futz and tries to kill his kids.
That's a good episode too.
Yeah. And then Koontz.
My Koontz is that I had to keep turning on subtitles.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know that I'm sometimes deaf in one ear, so maybe that isn't fair.
Yeah.
But I do think that there was like, not every character whispered, but a lot of characters whispered, and then they whispered to each other. And then, because they're already whisper talking, when they were trying to be actually quiet, they had to whisper.
My issue is, like, when they were whisper talking, I would turn the volume up, and then something happened.
And then you have to turn it back down.
The music would boom, and Beck would be like, turn that down! I'm like, sorry.
Yeah, I agree. So sound design, maybe?
Yeah.
Or sound directing?
And also, like, there were scenes that were so dark that I couldn't really see that.
It was a lot of the last episode or last two episodes.
Yeah. Which, like, obviously, like, this show should be very dark.
Yeah.
But there were points where I felt like it was too dark.
Like, I literally couldn't tell what was happening.
Maybe that's what they intended, but it's just frustrating from an audience perspective.
Yeah.
Koontz is hard for me. Like, I kind of want to say the ending, but I wouldn't say so much that I dislike the ending as I just have mixed feelings about it.
I do have questions about the ending, maybe that you can answer.
All right, well, we'll talk about that next. So what I'm going to say for my Koontz And this isn't a criticism of the cast and crew, because yay for them, they get to have a job for another year and they get to make more money. But I just don't understand what we're doing making a season two of this show. I don't...
It's going to be following the vampire kid.
I guess.
Yeah.
But, okay. So let's talk about the ending. What did you think? What are your questions?
Okay. So, maybe it's because by then I was mostly checked out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so his daughter turns him into a vampire and he takes the book.
Yep.
Like, inside of him into the sea or something, right?
Well, he just leaves.
Okay.
Because he's going to be the immortal keeper of the book. He'll always keep it safe from people who would abuse it.
All right. I would have just, like, covered it in concrete and dropped it in the ocean.
So, when was concrete invented? $6,500 BC. Okay, so yeah.
Because he's already a whaler. He knows, like, oceans. Like, go to a deep part of the ocean, cover it in concrete, drop it in the water.
So my first thought was also drop it in the ocean. I didn't think of concrete. So when I thought to myself, drop it in the ocean, my internal counter was eventually, it may take hundreds or thousands of years, but eventually it'll wash back up on shore and then we'll be back in the same situation, because the same argument is made in the Lord of the Rings, because somebody at the Council of Elrond suggests just throw it in the ocean. And they're like, okay, but that's just going to delay this. Eventually, it'll wash back up.
It's not our problem.
Well, they're elves. Some of these people are elves. Okay. So yes, it would be their problem.
It will be their problem. We're immortal, guys.
But concrete does sort of solve that.
Or you put it inside of a vampire you don't like.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have the curse. Concrete shoes, ocean.
Well, he did that to his daughter, though, and his daughter got out. He buried her in the ocean with, like, a weighted thing. I think they wrote themselves into a little bit of a corner with that book.
Okay, I that's what I'm thinking. It's because I was sitting there thinking that. I'm also sitting there thinking, oh, you can learn to love your sister again. I'm like, she's a fucking blood-sucking monster now.
Well, they'll have to feed her.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is just like the wife in the basement, just like, eventually all of them, none of them have been able to, like, at least, like, from a this show perspective, mm-hmm. we have not seen a vampire that has shown a modicum of long-term control.
Yeah.
So we don't have any evidence of that. I'm like, keeping her alive and with you is a really bad idea. And I feel bad because, like, that's your sister, that's a little kid that made a bad choice because she wanted to walk and see her mom. Like, I understand why the kid was manipulated. That's tragic. That's actually effective. But I'm sitting there going, this is a really bad idea. Like, from an outside perspective, I'm going, it's a really bad idea.
No, I agree. I probably would have done the same thing.
I would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I would have done the same thing for somebody I like a lot less than, like, a kid of my own or a sibling.
And you're right, that's probably is where season two is gonna focus on. It's either gonna be, like, him out there in the world.
Yeah.
Or it's gonna be focused on them and Loa and her, like, Or it may bounce between both. Like,
or maybe we'll do a time skip and it'll just be what's going on in Chapelwaite in so-and-so years. That might not be bad.
Yeah, actually.
Like, if you do it like an anthology series.
Yeah, and then, honestly, Loa and Adrian Brody could still be
there because they're vampires.
Yeah. Hmm. Actually, yeah, I think I kind of like that idea. That could be fine.
Hire us, Hollywood.
I mean, and that's what I said. You know, we wanted from the It show is not like a cast of like kids that we don't
that just
like
the same story.
But yeah, we want an anthology series with like different times where Pennywise has appeared throughout Derry's history.
That might not be bad. So those were just the things that I was thinking of when I was like watching the ending, and I was like, did I like miss like a step? Did they like come up with a method to keep her under control? Did they come up with a reason for that he has to like just have the book inside him? I mean, aside from, like, the family curse. That makes sense.
It has to be with a vampire
so that his kids don't go mad.
Yeah.
That part I got. But it was like,
It needs a keeper.
Honestly, like, if he really wanted to make the biggest sacrifice, like, he should put on the concrete shoes. I mean, that would be a really shitty existence.
Yeah, it would.
At the bottom of the ocean, just constantly drowning because you're immortal.
Can they just starve from not having blood?
They didn't really establish it.
Yeah.
So
they were
a little
loosey-goosey with the vampire rules. And also, like, they could be awake during the day as long as they weren't in the sun, but they could be outside
if it was a cloudy day.
If it was overcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I understand why they wanted, like, some decent day shots and...
Yeah. No, I didn't...
But...
That didn't bother me too much.
That's all I really wanted to know about the ending, was, like, if I was overthinking it, or if I had missed something.
No, you didn't miss anything. It's just she's their sister, and they want to try and make it work.
I said, I would have, like, from an outsider perspective, I'm criticizing this, but I probably would have kept a vampire around of a person I liked a lot less.
Yeah, I think if I were in the same situation and my daughter had died and came back as a vampire, I would try to make it work.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, staking her in the chest.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, those are literally your two options.
It didn't take the lazy way out by just having Loa get killed in the conflict of the last episode.
Or cured magically.
Or magically cured, like in Near Dark.
Which is what my fear was. I thought for sure, like, she was going to reach out into the sun and she was just going to be okay because they killed the main vampire.
Yeah, which love cured her.
Yeah, something like that.
I
was ready for that to be my biggest criticism.
That would have been my thing too. Yeah.
But honestly, I was like, you know what? As much as, like, I had been criticizing this show, like, they didn't use the giant worm, didn't magically cure little girl.
Yeah, I think I feel a little bit better about the ending now that we've talked it out.
I honestly, talking about the show has made me like the show more.
Yeah.
Like working through some of this.
And I don't disagree. Honestly, I agree with a lot of the criticisms you have.
It just doesn't... Not like deal breakers for you.
Yeah, and for me, it hits, like, a lot of things that I specifically like. Like, a relationship between a dad and his kids.
Yeah.
It's a period piece in pre-Civil War United States, which is one of my favorite historical time periods. It has Adrian Brody, who's one of my favorite actors. It's got a lot of, like, nods and Stephen King Easter eggs. It has a siege story.
Oh, did we talk about... Crap, who was the black guy?
Abel. No, we didn't.
He was great.
Yeah.
I loved Abel.
I liked his character a lot. I was kind of interested in the little subplot with the romance with the daughter, and they didn't end up doing too much. I guess he said no, and that was it. Like, okay, I guess we won't be a couple. They'll kill me.
He was like, no, they'll kill me.
They'll kill me.
He's like, you're white enough.
Yeah, I'm not white. You're white enough to get me killed. And I guess that's it.
Like, as much as I criticized some of the subplots, I thought that was really funny.
It was. And again...
but also, like, when I was talking about, like, racism you don't always talk about, like... He's like, yeah, sometimes you're white enough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
So...
The point is that she's not black, and he... Socially, he could only be with another black woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he could be, even if she was just, like, full Chinese, like, that's also not something that those people would accept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked his character. I thought the actor did a really good job. I liked how he played off Adrian Brody. I can't believe I forgot to talk about this dude. He was one of my favorite parts of the show.
Yeah, I actually, as we were going over the characters, I think while you were talking, I realized I didn't have him on the list. I was like, oh, I need to add him. And then
we got distracted. Oh, there we go.
I actually, and I really liked... It was just a random little thing. I really liked the, sir, I'll leave you with your family. It's been a pleasure. The pleasure was all mine.
Yeah.
It was just a cute little...
Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah. No, I liked him a lot. And honestly, he is definitely a character that could come up in season two.
Yeah.
Ranking, I have it pretty high. I understand and even agree with a lot of the stuff you have, but this just hits a lot of my personal tastes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I've actually, you know, I haven't been too shy about, I've disliked the majority of the things we've watched, but it's from a Stephen King property. It's an actor I really like. It's in a time period I really like. The overall tone of it I really like. I love the little e evil. I like the subplots with all the various townspeople. I like the Siege story. I love the Jack Torrance-esque-ness of Adrian Brody's Descent into Madness. It's my number 10. This is not something where I would say, like, if you told me this is my number 55,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to argue with
it's
that.
It's not that low.
Yeah. There's definitely, like, a lot of preference in what I enjoy about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like where if you watched like season one of The Mandalorian and just went, well, that's really shitty, I'd probably have words. I'd probably have things to say.
What about season four of The Mandalorian?
I haven't watched season four of Mandalorian yet because that's not out yet.
I didn't know where they were at.
Season three.
No, I haven't watched it yet.
I actually have some criticisms. It's good, but it's season one and two are definitely much better.
Okay.
Okay, so it's my number 10, below Nosferatu. And here's the middle of your list.
Okay. I liked it more than Victor Frankenstein. I think just from a production value and acting value, I have to put it above the original miniseries.
Yeah.
I liked it more than The Blob. Now it's going to get hard. I liked it more than Lolita 1962. I think it goes right below Dracula 1931.
Honestly, I would not have guessed that you'd have it even this high. It's your new number 27.
Yeah.
It's true, though. Like, sometimes, like, talking these things out either
makes you understand what your criticisms are, or
it makes you appreciate it more, yeah. Or sometimes it makes us dislike them even more. We just dogpile on it.
Yeah.
But no, that was good.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Rankings, Zombie Day. So just, I don't know if I was reading too much into these, but I felt like I was picking up on some, like, subtle Stephen King nods. Like, this was not like some Stephen King properties where they just
say, hi, hey, calm down, Cujo.
Yeah, like, oh my god, like, I hate that. But, like, the constant use of the whippoorwills
mm-hmm.
really reminded me of the birds in the Dark Half.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just because we've been talking about the Dark Half recently with those ranking videos we've been doing.
Yeah.
In the last episode, Rebecca Morgan says the phrase Night Surf, which is a short story that's also in the Night Shift collection with Jerusalem's Lot.
I think that has to be on purpose.
Yeah. There are several scenes in the hayloft of that barn, and every time they were up there, I was wondering if one of the kids was going to fall out of it,
mm-hmm.
because also in the Night Shift collection is the short story The Last Rung of the Ladder, which is about a child falling out of a hayloft and getting hurt.
Hmm.
And I was just, it's probably not intentional, but it was just putting me there. And then obviously The Shining. That whole one episode was just like a big nod to The Shining.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Homework, if you're a citizen of Preacher's Corner, you have a dark secret that your neighbors don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
I'm gay.
You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if they did that.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, like, it's a modern TV show. It'd be something that they would do.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll see that in season two.
Yeah, like, no, I'm gay with the black guy.
That's why he said no to Honor.
That's the real reason.
That's the real... If she would have been a white guy, he would have risked... Yeah, I don't know if I can top that. Okay, I would, shit, no, that's a little dark.
Do it. Just go dark.
Okay, I guess I'd be the Humbert of
yeah,
of Preacher's Corner.
What year did this take place in? How big of a deal was it then?
Like, it was in the 1850s. It would have been a big deal.
So a little bit of a big deal.
They would have been fine with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be a 30-whatever guy and marry a 16-year-old girl and they'd be cool with it.
Yeah, they'd be like, that's fine, yeah, as long as she's not 14.
Yeah. Okay.
It's my time.
Question for the listeners. Are you going to watch season two?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll try it.
I'm honestly, like, before talking about it, I was still going to watch it, but mostly just out of curiosity. But now my curiosity's even higher.
If they release it week to week, maybe we'll do like...
like a daily...
yeah, short bonus, like a 10-minute bonus episode on each.
Which is what we were planning on doing for Uzumaki if it ever gets released now.
Yeah, and we will do if it gets released.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, and like I said, I wasn't excited, but now I feel a little better.
Yeah, because I think we came up with... you know what's weird? Is we probably came up with better ideas than whatever they end up doing.
Yeah, it'll probably just be a shite fest, because at least the first season had the short story and Salem's Lot to kind of like
build off of
and yeah. All right,
anyway, let's not be Debbie Downers.
For further reading, if you do like horror in a historical time period, I definitely recommend checking out the works of Alma Katsu. She has a really cool short story called The Werewolf, which is about a werewolf in World War II Germany and at like a small, all like rural village in like northern Germany. And also she wrote a pretty cool novel about the Donner Party, where instead of them starving and being cannibals, they're attacked by werewolves. So I just realized both of those are about werewolves. But hey, I like werewolves.
Yeah, werewolves are cool.
Yeah, werewolves are cool. Do you have any recommendations for people who like Chapelwaite? Aside from, you know, all the other Salem's Lot stuff?
Midnight Mass.
Mm-hmm.
I think the shows are very similar.
Yeah.
I think that there are some things in Midnight Mass that just appeal to me more. Yeah, that's my recommendation.
All right, so upcoming on the Horror of Babylon, we are done with Salem's Lot coverage for now until if they ever release that godforsaken movie.
We should just pull a Fanboys and go steal it.
Yes. I actually had that idea.
Han Solo is a bitch.
Fuck. I think that's where my hatred for Seth Rogen started.
I fucking love that movie. I don't care what anyone says.
No, I love that. Are there people who don't like that movie?
Yeah, apparently it's considered bad, and I don't know why.
I haven't met any... well, I guess I don't go around asking people for their fanboys' opinions, but...
yeah.
No, I love that movie. But a while ago, I had the idea of, like, starting an episode with a joke. Like, we're going to temporarily put the show on hiatus because Daniel is dying of cancer and we have to go to Gary Dauberman's house and steal a cut of Salem's Lot off his laptop. And then we'll come back and record the last episode of The War of Babylon.
Dude, I'll start smoking again.
No.
I'll get it.
Because it wouldn't be like the movie. Like, he would send us to fucking prison for breaking and entering a house and stealing.
Yeah, but I'll be the only one to break in. Whatever, free cancer medicine.
I'm not let you going in alone.
Good man.
What would suck though, because at least when they broke into Skywalker Ranch, they got to see all the like cool memorabilia and stuff. What's Gary Dauberman going to have in his house? Like Annabelle? Like,
no, he's going to have cool Star Wars memorabilia.
Yeah, because he has money.
And you'll just start taking it.
So our next two Sunday episodes on August 20th will be The Last Voyage of the Demeter, and our next novel episode on August 27th will be The Exorcist by William Peter Blatty, which I think Hef will be here for.
Excited for it?
Yes.
I have like 10 pages left of the first book.
I'm waiting till we get closer, but I'm excited.
I'm making some extensive notes.
Good. It's kind of a deep book.
Yeah.
And what I'm really excited, because when I read the book a couple of years ago, I did something kind of weird, and I didn't rewatch the movie, so I haven't seen the movie since I've read the book.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if it's going to change my opinion of the movie at all, because that's a very, like, big, important horror movie to me. That's definitely, like, up there in terms of, like, the best horror movies of all time.
It's probably going to be my number two, so...
yeah, it's... I imagine, just based on my recollections of the two times I've watched it, I imagine it's going to be in my top three.
Yeah.
And then our next two bonus episodes on August 24th, the Alien-a-thon continues with Alien-a-thon Episode 4, Alien Resurrection, which is the last of, like, the regular series movies, and then we get into the spinoffs and then the prequels. And then we are back with the Treehouse of Horror of Babylon on the following Thursday with If I Only Had a Brain, which actually I think those are flipped. I think that one's first, but I'll fix that
netting. Yeah, whatever.
I'll fix that netting. Thank you to our patrons, Abigail, the First Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal patron. And thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. and you can say hello to Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas, who I just inherited a house from. He gave me my inheritance early. Turns out he has a big old farmhouse out in Mason County, or not Mason County, Preston County, Mason Town in Preston County. Mm-hmm. So I get that house, and apparently it's called Davis Waite.
Davis Waite.
God damn it. He told me that there were some pest issues there, but not to worry about it too much. I just plan to bring some Raid when we go out there. Oh, and one other thing I just wanted to mention, and I forgot to work it in there. Like, how inappropriate is it if you're, hanging out with some kids whose mom just died to do, a fake seance with those kids? Like, how dumb is that?
I'm currently watching Lovecraft County, and that also happens in that show.
That's funny.
Oh no, it's just a group of kids, but her dad just died, and they do a seance.
All right, bad decisions.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for slogging through Salem's Chapel Wait. Well, thank you for all of the reading Salem's Law, watching both miniseries and Return to Salem's Lot, and both the short stories. We're wrapping up Salem's Lot. And just quickly, in brief, how did our chunk of Salem's Lot coverage compare for you compared to our The Stand, It, Dracula, Frankenstein, The Ring, our other big projects?
I think we got a hand, by now we have a better handle on the big projects. The Stand was a little bit of a slog because we didn't know what we were doing right off the gate. I think Dracula is probably our best. This comes pretty close.
I think I may not have enjoyed the content as much as I did with some of the other ones.
Yeah.
But I think the content we're producing is probably...
is better, yeah.
Is better.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that. Stay tuned for our socials and stay scary.
Stay scary, everybody.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.